Psalm 94, an exposition from the Treasury of David by Charles Spurgeon. O Lord God, to whom vengeance belongs, O God, to whom vengeance belongs, show yourself. Lift up yourself, thou judge of the earth. Render a reward to the proud. Lord, how long shall the wicked triumph? How long shall they utter and speak hard things, and all the workers of iniquity boast themselves? They break in pieces your people, Lord, and afflict your heritage. They slay the widow and the stranger, and murder the fatherless. Yet they say, the Lord shall not see, neither shall the God of Jacob regard it. Understand, you brutish among the people, and you fools, when will you be wise? He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see? He that chastises the heathen, shall not he correct? He that teaches man knowledge, shall not he know? The Lord knows the thoughts of man, that they are vanity. From the Treasury of David. The writer sees evildoers in power and smarts under their oppressions. His sense of the divine sovereignty, of which he had been singing in the previous psalm, leads him to appeal to God as the great judge of the earth. This he does with much vehemence and importunity, evidently tingling under the lash of the oppressor. Confident in God's existence and assured of his personal observation of the doings of men, the psalmist rebukes his atheistic adversaries and proclaims his triumph in his God. He also interprets a severe dispensation of providence to be in very deed most instructive chastisements. And so he counts those happy who endure them. The psalm is another pathetic form of the old enigma, wherefore do the wicked prosper? It is another instance of a good man perplexed by the prosperity of the ungodly, cheering his heart by remembering that there is, after all, a king in heaven by whom all things are overruled for good. Exposition. Verse 1. O Lord God, to whom vengeance belongs, O God, to whom vengeance belongs, show yourself. Or, God of retribution, Jehovah, God of retribution, shine forth. A very natural prayer when innocence is trampled down and wickedness exalted on high. If the execution of justice be a right thing, and who can deny the fact, then it must be a very proper thing to desire it. Not out of private revenge, in which case a man would hardly dare to appeal to God, but out of sympathy with right and pity for those who are made wrongfully to suffer. Who can see a nation enslaved, or even an individual downtrodden, without crying to the Lord to arise and vindicate the righteous cause? The toleration of injustice is here attributed to the Lord's being hidden, and it is implied that the bare sight of him will suffice to alarm the tyrants into ceasing their oppressions. God has but to show himself, and a good cause wins the day. He comes, he sees, he conquers. Truly in these evil days we need a manifest display of his power. For the ancient enemies of God and man are again struggling for the mastery. And if they gain it, woe unto the saints of God. Verse 2. Lift up yourself, thou judge of the earth. Ascend thy judgment seat, and be acknowledged as a ruler of men. And moreover, raise yourself as men do, who are about to strike with all their might. For the abounding sin of mankind requires a heavy blow from thy hand. Render a reward to the proud. Give the measure for measure, a fair retaliation. Blow for blow, the proud look down upon the gracious poor and strike them from above, as a giant might hurl down blows upon his adversary. After the same manner, O Lord, lift up yourself, and return a recompense upon the proud, and let them know that you are far more above them than they can be above the meanest of their fellow men. The psalmist thus invokes the retribution of justice in plain speech. And his request is precisely that which patient innocence puts up in silence when her looks of anguish appeal to heaven. Verse 3. Lord, how long shall the wicked, how long shall the wicked triumph? Shall wrong forever rule? Or slavery, robbery, tyranny never to cease? Since there is certainly a just God in heaven, armed with almighty power, surely there must be sooner or later an end to the ascendancy of evil. Innocence must one day find an offender. This, how long, of the text, is a bitter complaint of all the righteous in all ages, and expresses wonder caused by that great enigma of providence, the existence and predominance of evil. The sound, how long, is very akin to howling, as if it were one of the saddest of all the utterances in which misery bemoans itself. Many a time has this bitter complaint been heard in the dungeons of the Inquisition, at the whipping posts of slavery, and in the prisons of oppression. In due time God will publish his reply, but the full end is not yet. Verse 4. How long shall they utter and speak hard things? The ungodly are not content with deeds of injustice, but they add hard speeches, boasting, threatening, and insulting over the saints. Will the Lord forever endure this? Will he leave his own children much longer to be the prey of their enemies? Will not the insolent speeches of his adversaries and theirs at last provoke his justice to interfere? Words often wound more than swords. They are as hard to the heart as stones to the flesh, and these are poured forth by the ungodly in redundance, for such is the force of the word translated utter, and they use them so commonly that they become their common speech. They utter and speak them. Will this always be endured? And all the workers of iniquity boast themselves. They even soliloquize and talk to themselves and of themselves in arrogance of spirit, as if they were doing some good deed when they crushed the poor and needy and spit their spite on gracious men. It is the nature of workers of iniquity to boast, just as it is a characteristic of good men to be humble. Will their boasts always be suffered by the great judge whose ear hears all that they say? Long, very long, have they had the platform to themselves, and loud, very loud, have been their blasphemies of God and their railings at his saints. Will not the day soon come when the threatened heritage of shame and everlasting contempt shall be meted out to them? Thus the oppressed plead with their Lord. And shall not God avenge his own elect? Will he not speak out of heaven to the enemy and say, Why persecutest thou me? Verse 5. They break in pieces your people, O Lord, grinding them with oppression, crushing them with contempt. Yet the men they break in pieces are God's own people, and they are persecuted because they are so. This is a strong plea for the divine interposition. And afflict thine heritage, causing them sorrowful humiliation and deep depression of heart. The term thine heritage marks out the election of the saints, God's peculiar interest and delight in them, his covenant relation of long standing to them and their fathers. This also is a storehouse of arguments with their faithful God. Will he not defend his own? Will a man lose his inheritance? Or permitted to be contemptuously despoiled. Those who are ground down and trampled on are not strangers, but the choice and chosen ones of the Lord. How long will he leave them to be a prey to cruel foes? Verse 6. They slay the widow and the stranger and murder the fatherless. They deal most arrogantly with those who are the most evident objects of compassion. The law of God especially commends these poor ones to the kindness of good men, and it is peculiar wickedness which singles them out to be the victims not only of fraud but of murder. Must not such inhuman conduct as this provoke the Lord? Shall the tears of widows, the groans of strangers, and the blood of orphans be poured forth in vain? As surely as there is a God in heaven, he will visit those who perpetrate such crimes, though he bear long with them. He will yet take vengeance, and that speedily. Verse 7. Yet they say, the Lord shall not see. This is the reason of their arrogance and the climax of their wickedness. They were blindly wicked because they dreamed of a blind God. When men believe that the eyes of God are dim, there is no reason to wonder that they give full license to their brutal passions. The persons mentioned above not only cherished an infidel unbelief, but dared to avow it, uttering a monstrous doctrine that God is too far away to take notice of the actions of men. Neither shall the God of Jacob regard it. Abominable blasphemy and transparent falsehood. If God has actually become his people's God and proved his care for them by 1,000 acts of grace, how dare the ungodly assert that he will not notice the wrongs done to them? There is no limit to the proud man's profanity. Reason itself cannot restrain him. He has broken through the bounds of common sense. Jacob's God heard him at the brook Jabbok. Jacob's God led him and kept him all his life long, and said concerning him and his family, touch not mine anointed, and do my prophets no harm. And yet these brutish ones profess to believe that he neither sees nor regards the injuries wrought upon the elect people. Surely in such unbelievers is fulfilled the saying of the wise, that those whom the Lord means to destroy he leaves to the madness of their corrupt heart. Verse 8. Understand, you brutish among the people. They said that God did not note, and now, using the same word in the original, the psalmist calls on the wicked to note and have regard to the truth. He designates them as boors, boorish, swinish men, and well was the term deserved. And he bids them understand or consider if they can. They thought themselves to be wise and indeed the only men of wit in the world. But he calls them boors among the people. Wicked men are fools, and the more they know, the more foolish they become. No fool like a learned fool is a true proverb. When a man is done with God, he is done with his manhood, and has fallen to the level of the ox and the ass, yea, beneath them, for the ox knows his owner, and the ass his master's crib. Instead of being humbled in the presence of scientific infidels, we ought to pity them. They affect to look down upon us, but we have far more cause to look down upon them. And you fools, when will you be wise? Is it not high time? You know the ways of folly. What profit have you in them? Have you no relics of reason left? No shreds of sense? If, as yet there lingers in your minds a gleam of intelligence, hearken to argument, and consider the questions now about to be proposed to you. Verse 9. He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He fashioned that marvelous organ, and fixed it in the most convenient place near to the brain. And is he deaf himself? Is he capable of such design and invention? And yet can he not discern what is done in the world which he made? He made you hear. Cannot he himself hear? Unanswerable question. It overwhelms the skeptic and covers him with confusion. He that formed the eye, shall he not see? He gives us vision. Is it conceivable that he has no sight himself? With skillful hand he fashioned the optic nerve in the eyeball and all its curious mechanism, and it surpasses all conception that he can himself be unable to observe the doings of his creatures. If there be a God, he must be a personal, intelligent being, and no limit can be set to his knowledge. Verse 10. He that chastises the heathen, shall not he correct? He reproves whole nations. Cannot he reprove individuals? All history shows that he visits national sin with national judgment. And cannot he deal with single persons? The question which follows is equally full of force, and is asked with a degree of warmth, which checks the speaker and causes the inquiry to remain incomplete. It begins, he that teaches man knowledge. And then it comes to a pause, which the translators have supplied with the words, shall not he know? But no such words are in the original, where the sentence comes to an abrupt end, as if the inference were too natural to need to be stated, and the writer had lost patience with the brutish men with whom he had argued. The earnest believer often feels as if he could say, go to, you are not worth arguing with. If you were reasonable men, these things would be too obvious to need to be stated in your hearing. I forbear. Man's knowledge comes from God. Science and its first principles was taught to our progenitor Adam, and all after advances have been due to divine aid. Does not the author and revealer of all knowledge himself know? Verse 11. Whether men admit or deny that God knows, one thing is here declared, namely, that the Lord knows the thoughts of man, that they are vanity. Nor their words alone are heard, and their works seen, but he reads the secret motions of their minds. For men themselves are not hard to be discerned of him. Before his glance they themselves are but vanity. It is in the Lord's esteem no great matter to know the thoughts of such transparent pieces of vanity as mankind are. He sums them up in a moment as poor, vain things. This is the sense of the original. But that given in the authorized version is also true. The thoughts, the best part, the most spiritual portion of man's nature, even these are vanity itself and nothing better. Poor man. And yet such a creature as this boasts, plays at monarch, tyrannizes over his fellow worms, and defies his God. Madness is mingled with human vanity, like smoke with the fog, to make it fouler, but not more substantial than it would have been alone. How foolish are those who think that God does not know their actions, when the truth is that their vain thoughts are all perceived by him. How absurd to make nothing of God when in fact we ourselves are as nothing in his sight.